This morning, I want to talk to you about an event that took place during the crucifixion of Jesus. Darkness. Darkness over all the land. We read about this in the 27th chapter, verse 45. Now from the sixth hour there was darkness over all the land until the ninth hour. And by Jewish reckoning time, we're talking about between noon, where we all know the sun is high in the sky, until 3 in the afternoon. All three Gospels record this event. Matthew 27, Mark 15, Luke 23. What's so important about this event that it is recorded in all three of the Synoptic Gospels? And I hope I can show that to you this morning in this lesson. This event was not a solar eclipse of the sun.
Amen.
It was the wrong time of the month. I'll explain that. Jesus had just observed the Passover with his disciples. Does that help? Let's go back and see when Passover is observed. We have to go to Exodus, because that's when it was first introduced. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, Exodus 12:1, in the land of Egypt, "This month shall be for you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year for you. Tell all the congregation of Israel that on the 10th day of this month, every man shall take a lamb according to their father's house, a lamb for a household." Skipping to verse 5, "Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male, a year old. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats. And you shall keep it until the 14th day of this month, when the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill their lambs at twilight. This day shall be for you a memorial day, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations, as a statute forever. You shall keep it as a feast." Jesus had observed the Passover with his disciples. On the 14th day of the month. Now, I'd love to go into a lot of science here, but I won't. I'll resist. I'm not talking about our calendars when you look at the 14th day. I'm talking about how months were observed in that period of time. The month is related to the moon, moon month. And when the moon is new, you can't see it, that's the first day of the month. Or maybe it's when the first little sliver of the moon shows. There's some debate as to what's really the first day. Not important. We're now at the 14th day. So we've gone from new moon to the 14th day. Well, what's the big deal about that? Well, if you look at the moon cycles, it's about 28 days. So we are smack dab in the middle of the moon going from new moon to new moon, which means it's full moon time. You don't have solar eclipses when the moon is full. You might have a lunar eclipse, but you're not going to have a solar eclipse. And our verse says, It got dark at noontime. So I hope I've convinced you it was not a solar eclipse. Maybe this will help. I already said that. I just want to say, therefore, this 3-hour event, remember? 6th hour to 9th hour, noon to 3, this 3-hour event must have been a miracle. August 21st, 2017, not too far ago, there was a total eclipse of the sun that could be seen in the United States. We didn't have a total eclipse where we live, but it went through the middle of the country. There were places that you could see the total eclipse. The total eclipse, that's when the moon shadow completely covers the sun, lasted about 2.5 minutes. Not 3 hours, 2.5 minutes. Here's an aside. Isn't it amazing that the moon's shadow just fits perfectly over the disk of the sun? Ever thought about that? I mean, if the moon was smaller, it would just be a BB, a dot. If the moon were further away from us, the size it is now, it would still be smaller. I wonder how that happened. Just by chance? Maybe. Okay, the total time from the beginning of the moon beginning to cover the edge of the sun and to the time it completely left the other edge of the sun was about 1.5 hours. And it wasn't dark when it started just sneaking over the edge of the sun. So, again, we have living proof, we've seen that happen in our lifetime, that it wasn't an eclipse. Wrong time of the month, too short a time. So let's take a little bit of a detour for just a few seconds and look at how the word darkness is used in the Bible. You know, it appears over 100 times. There's one specific Hebrew word and one specific Greek word that's used 99% of the time. There are some other words once in a while sprinkled in there. For all practical purposes, so over 100 times. So it's an important topic. I'm going to just mention a few, maybe 3 or 4. It's right there at the beginning. Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep. Not a fun place to live. God fixed that. The 9th plague in the land of Egypt against Pharaoh was darkness. I'll read to you in Exodus 10, verse 10, 21. Then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand toward heaven, that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt. A darkness to be felt. So Moses stretched out his hand toward heaven, and there was pitch darkness in all the land of Egypt. 3 days. Miracle. Pitch darkness. A plague. Not a good thing. Darkness is not being represented here as a good thing. Not a thing you want to deal with. Darkness is associated with the coming of Jehovah and judgment for wickedness. Isaiah talks about this in Isaiah 13. He said, behold, the day of the Lord comes, cruel with wrath and fierce anger, to make the land a desolation and to destroy its sinners from it. For the stars of heavens and their constellations will not give their light. The sun will be dark at its rising, and the moon will not shed its light. I will punish the world for its evil and the wicked for their iniquity. I will put an end to the pomp of the arrogant and lay low the pompous pride of the rulers. So in this bringing of judgment and punishment to a wicked world. The stars don't shine, the moon doesn't reflect the sun, and the sun's not shining from sun up to sundown. Darkness, again, not a friend. And it gets mentioned in Matthew 24. Maybe the second coming of Christ, maybe not. There's pros and cons for that interpretation. But Matthew records on Matthew 24, beginning in verse 29, immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. There will appear in the heaven the sign of the Son of Man, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. Okay, so just a little flavor of how the word darkness is used in the Bible. So, why is this miracle of darkness happening during the last 3 hours of Jesus' crucifixion? That's what I want to talk about this morning. Why is this happening? Well, good Bible students always look at what is said in the context of what's being said. What's going on before verse 45 in Matthew? Let's read that. Matthew says, "And when they crucified Jesus, they divided his garments among them by casting lots. Then they sat down and kept watching over him there. And over his head they put a charge against him, which read, 'This is Jesus, the King of the Jews.' Then 2 robbers were crucified with him, one on the right, one on the left. And those who passed by derided him, wagging their heads and saying, 'You, who would destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself. If you are the Son of God, come down from the cross.' So also the chief priests with the scribes and elders mocked him, saying, 'He saved others. He cannot save himself. He's the King of the Jews. He's the King of Israel. Let him come down from the cross, and we'll believe in him. He trusts God. Let God deliver him now, if he desires him. For he said, 'I am the Son of God.' And the robbers who were crucified with him also reviled him in the same way." So what's going on before verse 45? He's being made fun of. They're mocking him. They're laughing at him. They're bringing up all the things that he said, all that we know were true, but they're saying them in a mocking way. Jesus walked on water. He calmed storms. He did great things, and people were witnesses to these things. And yet, now he's hanging on a cross with a thorn of crowns on his head. He's in agony. What happens? I said this already. "Now from the 6th hour, there was darkness over all the land until the 9th hour. You see this? You're picturing this now? Everybody's there making fun of Jesus. Darkness. Oops. Maybe it's an eclipse. It'll go away, maybe. 3 hours. Darkness. Unexplainable darkness. Noontime. Context continued. This powerful miracle, I'm saying this, this powerful miracle is by Jesus. It's a vivid demonstration that he is in control of his death. We talked about this to some extent in our class this morning. here's a demonstration. You're making fun of me. I'll turn the lights out. He did. Let's go on. Jesus in John, you know, we're studying John. He said he was the good shepherd. Chapter 10. He said, I'm the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. For this reason, the Father loves me, because I laid down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down. I have authority to take it up again. This charge I've received from my Father. Amen. Satan believes I got him. The people believe we got him. Darkness. Who's in control? The man who said, was involved with when God said, let there be light. God is a light, Jesus is light. John tells us that. He makes it dark. What is the impact of this miraculous darkness on the witnesses? There you are at the foot of the cross. If you're Mary and Mary's sister and John, you know, you're grieving. Darkness. That has one impact. But the rest of the people, what do you think goes on in their minds? I don't know. I think that there's some fear and trembling going on here. Certainly, back in Exodus, when Israel was at the base of Mount Sinai and there was darkness and God was above the darkness, they didn't even want to get close to Mount Sinai. So I think maybe there's a lot of fear and trembling going on here. But what happens next after this? Jesus cries out with a loud voice. And a final loud cry. Matthew 27, Mark 15, Luke 23. All record this is what happens. And I'm underlining loud. I've been talking a little bit loud. How do I do that? Well, I have electronics, that helps. But I do it with breath. I have to blow a lot of air past my vocal cords. When you sing, take a deep breath and you sing. What do we know about a crucifixion? That form of dying. You're suspended. It's difficult to breathe. In fact, it gets so difficult that the only way you can breathe is by pushing down with your legs and your body to get the weight off your arms so you can take in a big breath. Jesus has been on the cross for 6 hours. His breathing is labored. And yet, for 3 hours it's been dark. And now, with a loud voice, which means he's got a lot of breath, he's making some statements. By the way, that's why they broke their legs, to hasten death. Couldn't push up anymore. You didn't have your legs to mount on a little rack there, or the nails, and push against it so you can get your lungs filled up. You basically die of asphyxiation. You just can't breathe. Not a nice way to die. I'm going to read the Matthew account here for you. And when the ninth hour, and about the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani. That is, my God, why have you forsaken me? Actually, he's quoting the first verse of Psalm 22. And later on, there are going to be things, and we've made reference to it today, of things that are going to be happening, that have happened, that were predicted in Psalms 22. Some of the bystanders hearing it, so they heard it, this man is calling for Elijah. And one of them at once ran and took a sponge, filled it with sour wine, and put it on a reed and gave it to him to drink. But the other said, "Wait, let's see whether Elijah will come and save him." And Jesus cried out again with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit. Doesn't tell us what he said. But Nathan's been giving lessons for the last 7 or 8 weeks on the sayings of Jesus on the cross. And some of the additional final statements were made were in John 19, "I thirst," and in Luke 23, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit," and in John 19, "It is finished." And so these statements were made with good volume. Everybody heard, and he gave up his spirit, yielded up his spirit. I already answered that, but the reason he's able to do this is simple. He is the Christ. He is the Son of God.
Amen.
Here's a demonstration of it. Darkness, loud statements at the end of 6 hours on the cross. All right, well, what effect did this have on those who witness those events? Let's look at Mark's account. "And when the sixth hour had come, there was darkness over all the land until the ninth hour. And at the ninth hour, Jesus cried with a loud voice, 'Eloi, Eloi, lema sabachthani,' which means, 'My God, why have you forsaken me?' And some of the bystanders hearing it said, 'Behold, he's calling Elijah.' And someone ran and filled the sponge with sour wine and put it on a reed and gave it to him to drink, saying, 'Wait, let us see whether Elijah will come and take him down.' And Jesus uttered a loud cry and breathed his last. And the curtain of the temple was torn in two from the top to the bottom. And when the centurion who stood facing him saw that in this way he breathed his last, he said, 'Truly this man was the Son of God.'"
Amen.
Now, wait a minute. He's looking at Jesus and he sees him breathe his last. And then he says, "Truly, this man was the Son of God." What? How did he come to that conclusion? You know, well, certainly the darkness for 3 hours started making him think a little bit about what was going on. But I would venture to say that these loud pronouncements was not something he had ever experienced before. People who are crucified don't die this way. They're gasping for breath, and eventually they succumb to death. And being a centurion, he had witnessed many crucifixions. He was an expert. This man died differently. Truly, this man was the Son of God. Interesting, this response of the centurion is mentioned in all three Gospels. When something shows up multiple times in the Bible, I think it's important. You know it is too. So as we conclude what we've learned from observing what happened on the cross the last 3 hours of Jesus' life, and how a Gentile was willing to make the statement, "Truly this man was the Son of God," let's think on these things as well as the sacrifice of Jesus as we partake of his body and his blood during the Lord's Supper.